The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Hotter than expected inflation data failing to derail the market's record run on Wednesday. The S&P 500 hitting another all-time high after consumer prices rose at the fastest pace since 2008. What should investors make of these mixed market signals between the economy and the market?
I think it's because investors are sort of becoming a little bit more aware of why this is happening. We've been hearing, obviously, for months about input prices like in lumber and other commodities that have been skyrocketing. But when investors really kind of dive into that a little bit, I think they are starting to understand that a lot of that is transitory. A lot of that is because we've had a pent-up demand.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And my thanks to CNBC for that clip. Coming up in a moment, Peter Grandage will be stopping by. We'll give you the latest on the markets, the economy, and everything that's happening. Look, are you going to be paying more money for your food, for your gas, for your housing? Is inflation on the way? And what's that going to look like for you? You might have trouble making ends meet right now. Maybe it's your kids that are having difficulty. Stay tuned. We'll get Peter's analysis on that coming up. But I heard Barry Graham talking about, you know, law enforcement across the country. And I heard a story today. I don't know if you've caught this one or not, but let me throw it in front of you here just so you're up to speed. Portland, right? What a mess that city has been. Known as the City of Roses or Rose City, but that's probably going to change because something like this, they're going to call it the City of Riots is what I think they're going to do. You know, there's a lot of disturbances going on there, and the police are really at a loss what to do. But I'll tell you what, if you're a citizen there, turn up the radio because if you're in law enforcement, your job just got harder. Crowd control police there. There was a crowd control police officer that was indicted on a charge of assault against a protester. And the indictment did not go over well. And 50 other officers who were part of that crowd control unit, 50 of these officers, 50 of them, they resigned en masse. They resigned en masse from their volunteer positions in that unit. So they're still police officers, but they're no longer going to be doing crowd control. That means that the department has to find others who are willing to be part of that unit, and they'll probably not. It's going to be a tough fight. You know, they're going to face an uphill battle finding volunteers. So big statement coming out of that department. So we'll continue to follow that story and see what happens. It's tragic. This is a great nation. I hate to see the division that we have here. I hate to see this, you know, reimagine law enforcement, you know, defund the police departments. I hate to see Americans loot and burn, and I hate to see the violence that we see in our streets. And I'm hoping that this will soon be behind us. But, you know, on a level closer to home, I don't know how you're doing financially or if you're concerned about what the Biden administration is doing in terms of the money that's being printed, the money that's being spent. I don't know if you're retired or getting close to retirement. To say that the markets are worried about the future, clearly that's an understatement. Yeah, the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, he made an announcement earlier this week, and he announced that inflation, it could be higher, it could be more persistent than expected. And stock owners have been unloading as a result of that. I don't know if you caught the latest numbers on the Dow. The Dow closed down something like 530 points today after losses on Wednesday and on Thursday. In fact, it closed down 3.5% on the week. That's a pretty significant drop. So a lot of people are saying, what's this mean? What's the future going to hold? Inflation this year is running right now at about 5%, and that's the highest it's been since 2011 when it was at 3%, right? A radical change, right? Look where you were 4 years ago. Look where we are today. Yet, despite this, you know, this heating up, despite all the money that the federal government has pumped into the market through COVID relief bills, right? The Fed chairman said, we're going to keep keep those interest rates close to zero for the time being. But they did forecast that there will be two interest rate hikes 2 years from now. Previously, they had no interest rate hikes forecasted at all. So along with inflation, housing prices are going through the roof. You might know that. I mean, it is a seller's market. The problem is you sell your house, you got to buy one, right? It's just an example. One realtor put a house on the market in Colorado Springs, which the owner had been renting out. The realtor was very clear in the ad that this was not a place you wanted, because after the owner evicted the tenant for non-payment, the tenant went through and just totally trashed the place, just destroyed it, right? This is how insane the housing market is. People began bidding on this property, bidding $600,000. The property's probably going to need $100,000 worth of work. But there are signs that things might be slowing down, too. The number of mortgages this week dropped for the second week in a row. So let's take a look at it. If you want to join me, you've got a question, you want to tap into the expertise of Peter Grandage, I know he'd love to talk to you. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And if you are unfamiliar with Peter, or maybe you've been listening to him a long time, you can always get in touch with him at petergrandage.com. That's his website, okay? He provides guidance on matters of finance through that company. It's Peter Grandage & Company. And the website, petergrandage.com. And as I often say, I always qualify before we talk to him who he is. He was dubbed the Wall Street Whiz Kid in the markets because of how accurately he was able to predict movements like what we're seeing today, you know, rise and fall of the market. Peter made millions, lost them, and then he had this great conversion, and he realized, like, I'm a former Wall Street Whiz Kid. Just came out with his latest version of his book under that title, too, so you could check that out, too. But it's well worth the read, and it's always good to tap into his expertise. Peter, welcome back. Good afternoon.
Good to be with you, Drew.
Boy, a lot going on, huh? I don't even know where to start. How about let's talk the market first. Let's talk about what we're seeing there. Down 3.5% on the week. It seems investors are worried. Is this a temporary sell-off? Do you think we're going to see things change? And is concern of inflation actually driving those lower numbers?
Well, you know, back in April, I used a word for the first time almost in a 40-year career that I'd never used to describe how I felt, and that was the word petrified. In fact, I actually, for the first time in decades, suggested cash be the single largest part of my portfolio. And it's not that I just turned bearish then. I've not been a roaring bull, to say the least. But I at least invested in other sectors that did as well or surpassed the stock market. But it got to the point where there was such complacency, such price for perfection, and so overwhelming one-way thinking coming out of a financial service industry where almost 40% of advisors have only been given advice since the last financial crisis. So they have no experience on the downside except a few weeks when the COVID first hit. All those things combined and a lot more reasons just made me feel that what we're starting to see now, we've been seeing it for a couple months, we've been seeing a weakening, we've seen some of the air out of what I've called, I think it's the greatest financial bubble in history. It'll go down because it's across so many sectors. But what I'm really most concerned about, and I've been blessed by Relevant Radio to be on, and I hear from a lot of Relevant Radio listeners, and whether they're devout Catholics or wild pagans or somewhere in between, about 7 or 8 out of 10 families that I speak to at all levels, Drew, from working class all the way up to the athletes that I dealt with that made tens of millions of dollars a year, they're living at least one, if not two, lifestyles ahead of their finances. And the problem with that is it worked when we had declining rates and cheap money and could refinance and keep refinancing and not, in a sense, pay any more than I was already paying. But that game is behind us. It's clear the Fed realizes that. I mean, we can't go – zero interest rates would have been the death knell. They've seen that in Europe. They don't want to see that here. And so what we have now is we have the worst ever social, political, and economic period. Drew, I don't think other than the Civil War, we've been more divided as a country socially and politically. I don't see how, if we had a financial crisis next week, that the two parties can go in a room and work together as they did in previous financial crises. I think we have a lot of paying to do. And the biggest issue, and you know, you and I've had this discussion for how long I've been on, the word debt. We just continue to see it skyrocketing now. We're seeing it now projected to go above $30 trillion. And this is really simple math. And if people can grasp this, hopefully they'll put some caution into the way that they're approaching the financial world. At $30 trillion, if we just see interest rates return just back to 5%, Drew, 5% was considered low not too many years ago. If we are going back to a normalization of rates, that would mean a $1.5 trillion interest that we owe on that debt. Now, think about this. In the last good year we had, because we can't count last year, so 2019, the United States government took in just over $3.5 trillion in total revenue. And how did they get that? Taxes. Well, we're going to be almost at half of our total income just to pay interest. Forget about the principal, forget about military, forget about everything else. We've gone past the fail-safe level in the debt issue. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be around to pay the full price for that because I'm 65. Maybe they can kick the can a couple more times, Drew. But I know my child, and if she ever has children, they're going to be the real payers for that. And I still find most people are not paying attention to debt, not only in their own home, not only in their businesses, but across state lines and the federal government. And I think the COVID actually made it easy for them to kind of put that aside because people just want to feel a sense of just normalcy again. You know, I'll worry about that later. You know, let's put that off. I'm glad we can go out now. And it's at a time when we really should be doing it and you should be hammering this printing of just unrelented trillions of dollars now. Drew, I just got to tell you this, and I only came off this conversation an hour ago with somebody I know for almost 40 years. I never imagined in my wildest thoughts that we could have multi-trillion dollar budget deficit, not our total debt, just for 1 year, we're now going to be over $2 trillion budget deficit. It's unthinkable, it's unmanageable, and eventually it's going to be the downfall of what happens here in the United States.
Well, my guest today, Peter Grandage, if you want to get in, I'll open the phones, 888-914-9149. You can get in now. I'll go to the phones in a second. Peter, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking, well, why is the Fed just so slow in responding to inflation? I mean, clearly we're seeing it happening. You know, why not a swifter response?
Well, the big concern is, if you think about it, two Decembers ago, before we had COVID, they were going to do the same thing that they claim now that they're going to do. They're going to take the punch bowl away.
Right.
And the market caved, if you remember, in that December. It fell 6 or 8%. And this is a financial world that's gotten used to what I call monetary heroin. They're addicted to easy money. And so when that happened, they view the market as the lifeline to America. And you know what? To the 1 to 10%, it is, because that's who's greatly benefited from the last couple of years. But the masses of Americans don't benefit in the way that it does. And here we are again, and it would not surprise me again if this sell-off continues and starts to come down harder, that they back away from that again. They painted themselves in a corner. If they raise interest rates, as we just discussed, it really impacts how we pay off our debt. However, if they keep allowing this to happen as it is, they've seen what cheap money has done. It's driven up people are bidding up things that are insane. You know my feeling about Bitcoin and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
And people have no real regard to understand that almost 75% of Americans don't even have qualify enough money to have the minimum savings to retire. And so somewhere's down this road, Drew, I don't know if it's 3 months from now, 3 years from now, or maybe 10 years from now, but the longer it takes, the way we keep acting, the tougher it's going to be to eventually deal with it. And I don't believe we have the social political makeup anymore to really do it in a good way, to come out of it, you know, in the right way, as you like to say, as America used to be.
Yeah, you know, this is something you predicted. Others have predicted simply because of the amount of money that the federal government was printing. You know, and again, I'm not the financial guy. You are. I mean, why couldn't people see this? I mean, it just only made sense. You continue to print money. I see how much the current administration is spending, you know, in terms of everything from, you know, bailouts to vaccinations. You know, this is basic finance. I mean, did no one see this coming?
Drew, you and I've had this discussion. Let's do it again, because there's probably a lot of listeners that maybe not heard at that time. You know that I always said the poster child for it was wrong, through no fault of their own. This industry is not at fault. But I used them as the poster child for what's wrong in America, and that's public storage. my parents, you know, people that grew up in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even into the 70s, they had much smaller dwellings. You didn't drive down every three blocks and see a place where people pay money to keep extra stuff there. And one of the big problems is we've gotten used to a lifestyle above really what a lot of people can afford. And we've done that because we become debtors. Listen, Drew, I don't know your parents. I know if they're still alive, but I doubt very much if they had credit cards, they used them in the same way that we use them, or our children now use them even more. We just used to get by on, hey, can we afford it? Now people just ask, hey, can we make the first month's payment? It's a whole lifestyle that has changed, and people just don't have the financial, the teaching that we have. Listen, I gave up a lot of income by putting my Catholic Christian faith on the front door, okay? And to tell people to turn to the Bible to look for financial advice, two-thirds of the people just walk and turn around. Either they're agnostic or they think you're a charlatan or anything of that nature. But I even find devout Catholic Christians and even our Protestant brethren who tend to read the Bible more on a regular basis, many of them still don't use that as the first or at least the source where the greatest teachings. Listen, it's the greatest book ever written. And what's the greatest thing it talks about? The second most talked about topic is matters of monies and finance. So why people don't read the Bible for financial means is beyond me. And what's the one thing in Scripture that you can't find a positive thing about when it comes to matters of finance? And that's debt. There's so many great warnings, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, of what debt and owing money and all leads to. And, you know, God didn't put that there because he didn't think we're going to need to know that. It's something I think people, if they haven't looked at, it's a good time to dust it off the book and start reading it.
Well, I always love when you are able to bring in that particular God angle to this. I think it's so important, especially in dealing with issues as impactful as this.
It's not a money winner, let me just tell you. From an income point, especially when I left dealing with athletes because of what happened with Black Lives Matters and all this stuff, but I can just tell you this. If you preach the Protestant prosperity angle, yes, you can profit from it greatly. But when you start to tell people to turn to Scripture and look at really the teaching in the Scripture is, hey, less is more. You need to tithe. That's another thing that people say to me, what's the best investment I can make? And I tell them tithing, and they look at me like, what are you, crazy? And I says, well, listen, it's the only chapter in the whole Bible where God challenges is a Malachi. He says, listen, trust me, tithe, and I'll take care of you. And yet, so few people are willing to do that. We were seeing dramatic drops-offs, in all sorts of tithing to worthy charities, to places like Relevant Radio. And I urge everybody, and you didn't ask me to do this, but I'm just saying this out of my heart. I know a lot of people listening now have listened to me and have done well. It's time to show that. When Relevant Radio runs its fundraiser, you have to keep places like Relevant Radio and the few places that allow our faith to be spoken to, because you do stories about that all the time, how hard it's becoming. Listen, I get doors slammed in my face. There's financial networks that I used to go on told me, listen, you can't come on here and tie God into finance. And I say, well, it's the very reason that I'm here. And so I just urge everybody to really start to take a hard look now at our faith and know that how that ties into financial matters.
All right, let me do this. We'll grab a couple calls for you, Peter, because you know how quickly time goes. 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off, ask your questions, share your views, join the conversation. Peggy is listening in Chicago. Peggy, good afternoon.
Hi. I wanted to share a couple things. One is most people have no idea of what this amount of debt means, and I thought I'll give you an analogy so you can understand. One, $1 million is a briefcase. Like those one attaché cases full of $100 bills. That's $1 million. It's a lot of money. $1 billion is an outhouse full of $100 bills. Well, that's bigger, pretty scary. But $1 trillion is a warehouse. It's a warehouse full of $100 bills. That's an awful lot of money to pay back. And you're saying, well, there's a bunch of warehouses that we owe. It's going to take a lot. And for me, I feel like a deer in the headlights of an oncoming car. I was really grateful, really grateful, that somebody had the guts to stand up and say, look, now is the time to put your money where your mouth is. Give. Show the generosity that's in your heart. Give to God. because God loves a cheerful giver. And
amen.
Nobody said that for a long time, and especially somebody in finance to say, hey, that's it. And that's all I wanted to say, okay?
Well, Peggy, thanks. Thanks for the example, and thanks for that compliment for Peter. And Peter, I think we have to have you back to do a show on tithing. Last time you were on, I said the same thing. Remind one of my producers to do that, because I think it's such an important issue. But I'll let you follow up also just on Peggy's comments.
Sure, and Peggy does a wonderful way of describing to people to understand how much bigger our debt is. But understand this, Drew, I know it's only going to make you sick and go home, and the poor wife is going to have to hold your head tonight, but listen to me. That's just on the federal level.
Yeah,
states, unfortunately, don't have a printing press like the federal government does. So not only are taxes going up on the federal level, but they're going to go up across the board on state and local levels. Mm. But then you have also the tremendous amount of corporate debt that's out there. Listen, one of the reasons bond yields became so low, the Fed is still buying $120 billion bonds every year. Do you know that the Fed's balance sheet now is $8 trillion? That's all paper money. They didn't have $8 trillion saved from all their hard work. That's money created thin air. It's $8 trillion. And who's 70 to 80% of all the bonds purchased each month? That's how we keep funding our running of our country. It's the Federal Reserve. I hate to call it, but it's a scheme. It's funny money. It's funny money printing funny money. I mean, that's what it really comes down to.
Peter, before I go back to phones, just another issue for you here. I mean, I've been following this housing market. The housing market is so hot, and yet so many people are still out of work. There are nearly 2 million open positions around the country. The housing market was predicted to crash, I think, in 2008 and then a recession. Could we, or I should say the housing, it wasn't predicted. Precipitated is what I meant to say. That 2008 crash, and then we had a recession afterwards, and we rebounded from that. Market came back. Everything seemed to be better. But what do you see happening in the not-too-distant future? Why is the market so hot? Do you think we'll see a bubble and a crash? And is there threat of a recession? I know it's a lot right there, but I'll give you those final thoughts.
It's just one in many different areas of highly excessive speculation and parabolic rises that can't be sustained. I always like to describe it as a bottle rocket, if you remember as a kid when you launched it off.
Sure.
It's powerful and all, then it goes almost straight up, and sometimes they go a little further than you imagine, and then they go poof, and they come back down hard. And that's what we're facing here all at the same time. I mean, we're going to need a magician more than the Fed to get this to somehow soft land and not see, an across-the-board strong recession. And I just think like this is, we've been living way beyond our means for too long of a time, just like myself who's put on too much weight, and I've had a doctor tell me, Pete, if you want to try to sustain your life longer, you need to lose weight. Well, we need to kind of cut back, and not just for 6 months. It may take a generation before we can get back into a better financial condition that we're currently in as a country.
Well, Peter, I appreciate your advice, your insight, and your years of expertise. If people want to get connected to you, the best way to do that, I'm assuming, is just petergrandage.com?
petergrandage.com, and please give my apologies to your wife for bringing you home upset, okay?
I'll do that. It's the weekend, at least. Peter, thanks. We'll catch up soon. petergrandage.com. Check it out. petergrandage.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Follow his insights. I've spoken to many people who really appreciate his view. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I think what we have is a crisis of confidence. While dads feel prepared to offer counsel and advice, they largely don't believe they are influential. Daughters in this day and age, in the 21st century, they really can make a difference.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, this weekend, of course, we celebrate Father's Day. Right, great day. I hope you, if your father is still alive, will tell him how much you love him, appreciate him, and thank him for all that he does. As a father myself, I have five kids. I think back on my own dad, and I think about how I underappreciated him until I became a father. And then I realized the sacrifices that he made and the lessons that he taught me and actually the influence he had on me and in particular you know, on my faith. And I thought today we could talk a little bit about it. Maybe, you know, I'd love to hear from you. We'll open the phones in a minute, but I'd love to hear how maybe your father influenced you. What lessons did you learn from your own father? You know, just from an economic perspective, I was reading earlier today that in America, I think we spend about $1 billion every year buying gifts for our dads. $1 billion. Those numbers just strike me. Are your dads hard to buy for or easy? I think I'm relatively easy, but some people say my dad has everything, you know, that he needs. Mother's Day, though, that holds the record for the most phone calls. Father's Day, check this out. It has the most collect calls, right? How appropriate. Mother's Day has the record for most phone calls. Father's Day, the most collect calls. And dads aren't at the top of the list when it comes to Hallmark. Hallmark considers Father's Day to be the fifth largest card-giving holiday. But at least we're in the top 10, right? The top five. So let's talk dads today. You know, I love it. You know, I try to be a forgiving, loving, gentle father, a providing father for my kids, because I really do believe that as a father, so often that is how your children will then see God the Father. And if he's harsh, if he's unforgiving, I think sometimes that does influence in a negative way a child's relationship with God. I've often said there's nothing more powerful than seeing a man on his knees in prayer. You know, I think it speaks volumes to your kids without ever speaking or uttering a single word. And I think the role of fathers, gentlemen, I think we sometimes underestimate how important our role is on our children. I really do. I think I really understand. Although scientists polled something like 1,000 adults, they found that I have a problem with this stat because I don't really believe it. I saw this earlier today. It said that 28% felt their fathers had the most influence on their life. I don't know where your stat is. Would you put your dad at one-third, one-quarter? 28% felt that their fathers had the most influence on their lives. 53% chose their mothers, and 15% credit both their mother and their father. I'd have to put myself in the camp of mother and father. Both brought different values and helped form me to be the man I am today. But, of course, let's celebrate this Sunday, right? And I'm not sure how you're gonna celebrate it. 20% of black kids in the city of Minneapolis right now are living with both of their parents. That's a small number, just 1 out of 5. And it's a pretty obvious correlation between the violence plaguing the city and the lack, I think, of cohesive nuclear family with a married father and mother and their children. In fact, coming up in a minute, Tyler Rowley is going to be stopping by, and I'll share some stats on how important a father is in the life of your child. I often go back to those Baltimore riots that took place, you know, several years ago, and I saw a stat like 60 or 70% of the children in that city were fatherless. And there's a direct correlation to children who grow up with a father, children whose fathers are involved in their life in a beneficial way. They do better in school. They stay out of trouble. They don't do drugs. You know, the whole litany of things that take place. But unfortunately, you know, too high a percentage of children in our country live without their biological father. And I think we're seeing a lot of that in society at large. And I won't recite all the stats of not having a father around. You can look that up. But I do want to look at the positive influences that a father can have. And in fact, it's well known that fathers who take their children to church, even without the mother, this is a great study, the rate of recidivism, the rate of kids going back to church is off the charts. It's so much higher than for fathers who don't go, or if only the mother takes them. You know, this is after they grow and leave the house. So a lot going on. There's a lot of factors involved in all of this. But Tyler Rowley is an author, and he heard a homily one time where the priest said that his father was deeply influential in his vocation. And it got him wondering about other Catholic leaders. And he started asking around, and he wrote a book. The book's title is Because of Our Fathers. It's published by Ignatius Press. If you want to check it out, it might make a good Father's Day gift. And he profiled two of relevant radio personalities here, Patrick Madrid, one of my great colleagues here, Father Rocky as well, along with a whole litany of others. I was checking it out a little bit earlier today, and the lineup of people in his book, I think would be fun to read. It really would be. So you can check it out. He wrote, he's got Bishop Strickland, Abby Johnson, a whole litany of people in there. He joins me today. We'll talk a little bit more about it. Good to have you with me today, Tyler. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew.
Congratulations on your book. Yeah, it's good to have you here. It really is.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You know, this whole issue of fatherlessness, you know, and let's talk about that before we talk about your book or anything else. I know you profiled 23 people, I think, in the book, but the stats, two things. One, what happens in a fatherless family? That's one. And then secondly, the impact of a father on faith. I think those are two key things here. Let's start first with some of the data and the stats that we're now seeing.
Yeah, fatherlessness in general is the data is inarguable at this point. I mean, this was inarguable in the 90s. David Blankenhorn, in my opinion, has one of the most comprehensive books on this. It's called Fatherless America, and it's just data after data after data. If you want to try and remember some of these, there's a stat. You can remember 20-10-5. You keep reducing it. 20 means 20. Without a father in the home, you're 20 times more likely to grow up poor, 10 times more likely to not get a high school diploma, and 5 times more likely to end up in prison. So 20-10-5, poverty, education, and prison. And I mean, that's a national crisis when you look at the percentage of kids who are growing up in those situations. I mean, sometimes it's just a foregone conclusion. The kid doesn't have a chance because he doesn't have the strong person in his family that's going to give him the discipline and the order and the peace that he needs to contemplate his own existence, to be at peace with the fact that the people who created him stuck around and loved each other and then loved him and their brothers and sisters. When you don't have that, I mean, the anger and the resentment that is unleashed onto the world, you know, once these kids get to be 6, 7, 8, and then more violently into their teenage years, it's a crisis in our country. And, you know, myself and some other people, we were hoping that Donald Trump was going to win, and we were going to present him with the idea that this needs to be one of the first things that's talked about at every single State of the Union address. When a president addresses the country in January every year, what is going on with the fatherlessness rate? What is going on with the two-parent household? Is it gotten better or has it gotten worse? Because all those other things, education and healthcare and schooling, all of that other stuff depends on that one thing, the family unit. And our Catholic faith is so beautifully represented by the Holy Family. There's a reason that God gave us a family, you know, that ushered in salvation, you know, Christ in a family, and he brings St. Joseph into that family. You know, you could argue didn't need to do that. You know, you have the holiest woman to ever live. You have God incarnate. But the first thing that God does is bring the Father into that family to show us the representation of how we're supposed to grow up.
Yeah, that's really, really well said. If you want to join us, you can dial in 888-914-9149. It's 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off or ask your questions. It's always good to have you here with us. There's a Swedish study. We might have talked about it in the past at some point in time. A very famous one about how a father's own faith life impacts their children going to going back to church. And I think about where we are today. I mean, you often go to church, and it used to be, I mean, and I don't hate the broad brush, but churches are filled with older people now. They tend to be female, the demographic. And where are the men? Where are the young men? You know, where's the next generation? We talk about these nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, as those who have no religious affiliation. They don't feel they need church. And I just wonder whether it's because of divorce. I wonder it's because the father has abdicated his role to lead and to you know, lead spiritually in the family. But we're seeing this crisis in the church right now with people exiting organized religion. Share a little bit, if you could, that study and ultimately the role that a father has on making sure that the faith of his children is carried on.
Right. So that study shows that if the father is not a regular churchgoer, the child ends up having a 2-3% chance of himself becoming a regular churchgoer, even if the mother is very active, she's very regular. the father stays home on Sunday, you know, isn't in the picture, or just stays home and watches football, that kid will have a 2-3% chance of becoming a regular churchgoer himself. But if you take the inverse of that, and the father is regular, and even if the mother is non-practicing, that jumps up to 60%. So that's one of many studies that have shown this. And I always tell people this, you know, studies are studies. They're data points out there that sometimes you can't relate to very well. Make it relatable. Think about the people in your life. This is what drove me to write the book. Think about your family members and your friends, and go down one by one. And if you have a friend who has a completely fallen away Catholic father, doesn't care about it, even mocks it, just as done with the religion, I assert that there is a extremely high chance that that person in your life does not practice the faith, that has fallen away. But in the inverse, if you know someone who has a really committed and dedicated father, there's at least some sort of active participation among that son or daughter in the church. And I think this kind of gets to the heart of what you were saying about buying things for fathers. It's kind of hard to buy things for fathers for Father's Day, right? Kind of a simple guy. He's not motivated very much by emotion. You can't just bring him flowers and he's going to, you know, kiss you all over the face. Because he's sort of, men tend to be more simple and less emotional. When the father does something, when he gets down on his knees, when he takes his family to mass, when he teaches you about a certain subject, the son or daughter has this sort of this natural inclination to say, wow, this must be really important. If dad is taking the time out of his day to instruct me or to taking the time out of, you know, doing other things that he enjoys, there's sort of a psychological thing that happens where the children tend to see that that it's more important if dad is doing it. And men just need to recognize that. That's built into the psyche. I mean, there's all sorts of psychological studies that show this. And we just need to recognize we've been given a power. We've been given this sort of amazing ability to influence the very people that we create. And if society wants to tell us that, no, men and women are the same, and you don't need a man to necessarily lead, that's all by design. All these things in the culture are by design to reduce, A, the role of the man, make him emasculate his role, and B, just reduce the number of families in general so you make sure it doesn't happen. Everything from contraception, abortion, this homosexuality, all of this stuff is made to reduce, to emasculate the man, emasculate his role, and to reduce the number of families out there.
That's so true. My guest today, Tyler Rowley. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, Paul in Miami, you're on deck. I'll get you on the air. And I do want to talk about single mothers. A lot of moms listening right now saying, man, I'm concerned. I'm listening to these stats. I'm listening to the impact that a father has on the faith of my child. And there's no father in the relationship right now. What does that mean for my child? We'll tell you when we return.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's great to be with you today. An early happy Father's Day to all of you dads out there. Thanks for the sacrifices that you make. And, you know, turn to St. Joseph. Ask him to help you to be a better father. I think we, as fathers, I'm a father, we're going to be judged, evaluated when we stand before God in our final review on how we fulfilled this mission and this vocation God has given to us. It's a noble charge. And, you know, I know I probably have failed at times, and I just pray that, you know, when I draw my final breath, my kids will look back and say my father was a good and honorable, a selfless, a generous man, you know, who loved God and shared those values with me. And I pray for that, and I pray that for you too. I really hope it works out. You know, you take a look at where we are today, just statistically, and my heart goes out to you know, children without fathers. I mean, children in father absent homes are 4 times more likely, as my guest points out, maybe even more, to be poor, right? We talk about the incarceration rates, the drug rates, the lack of faith. The rate of suicide today is through the roof, right? People taking their life by suicide. The children of single-parent homes are more than twice as likely to commit suicide. That's a staggering, stunning statistic, right? Children born to single mothers, they show higher levels of aggressive behavior than children born to married mothers. And, you know, those living in single mother households, you know, they may experience partnership transitions and other challenges in life. I don't want to scare people, and I'll tell you why. I have a sister who is a single mother, and she raised my nephew, you know, never had the father in the life of the child. But that's where I think we can bridge the gap. I think as uncles, as siblings, as, you know, as relatives, you can step in and really make a difference in the life of that child that may not have a father. And these children are not lost. There's a lot of single parent children have grown up to accomplish wonderful things and be just, you know, beautiful people. I'm joined today by somebody who has written a book on fatherhood and the influence of fathers. His name is Tyler Rowley. He wrote a book, Because of Our Fathers. You can get it at Ignatius. You could probably even order it at Amazon. Might make a great gift for Father's Day. If you order it today, you'll probably get it. And he features guys like the Super Bowl champion Matt Burke and Mary Rice Hassan, who's a great guest on this program here. And you know, Father Rocky, Patrick Madrid, who you know, are all featured. They're all contributors in this book. He looks at 23 Catholics who explain how their fathers help raise them in the faith, from bishops to NFL players to successful business people. And I thought, what a great guest to have today as we can get ready to celebrate fatherhood and the great gift of it. And Tyler, before I go to the phones, we've got several people who want to talk to you. I want to pick up on the single mother issue. I mean, you can go through stats and they can be terrifying to a single parent out there. But like I said, my sister raised a beautiful son. He's balanced, has a good job, and she did well with him. And, you know, it was hard for her, as it is for, I think, a lot of single mothers listening right now. But let's talk about that, because there's a lot of moms saying, oh, my gosh, it's Father's Day. I hate this day. My husband left me, or I had a child because I didn't want to abort it, or whatever the reason is that these mothers decide to raise their children. What's the role of a mother, and how does it offset that fatherlessness?
Right. Yeah. It's never hopeless. And obviously the grace of God can overcome anything. So don't feel hopeless. One practical piece of advice that I give people to this question. So the point I'm making in my book is not that Catholicism is true because a father is the primary influencer of it. We need to come to the truth of Catholicism apart from this sort of sociological truth that fathers primarily influence them. But if you take the opposite of that, that's where I would go with it, with, to, you know, a single mother who's trying to get through to her son and get him to think, you know, look at this sociological truth that's out there, that's well documented, you know, spiritually and socially, that your father was, you know, was at least supposed to be the biggest influence in your life. Is it possible that you've rejected the faith because of that poor example? Because no matter what, everyone needs to personalize their relationship with Christ. If you had a great father and he kept you in the church, well, eventually you still need to confirm your faith. So a father who wasn't there, or a father who mocked the religion or just didn't participate and the children fell away, right. You know, to that mother, I would say, tell them that sociological, spiritual truth that's out there. And they may say, well, I don't want to not follow the truth just because my father didn't correctly influence me.
Right.
That's just one sort of practical application that I would offer for that.
All right, well, so let's grab a couple calls. Time will go quick. 888-914-9149. Paul's listening in Miami, Florida. Paul, thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Tyler Rowley.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey. Hey, Paul.
I was having a discussion with my aunt earlier today, and she was arguing with me that, and particularly in black families, that the biggest plight of the black family in the United States today is, you know, structural racism. And my counter argument to her was that the biggest fight right now, specifically for African Americans in the United States, is the implementation of the welfare state, the Great Society, the war against poverty, that substituted the father figure in the house. Mm-hmm. And where back in the 1930s or 1940s, you had 80% marriage rate. Now you have, like you said earlier, a 20% of kids are raised with a two parents in the household. And how do you feel about the argument that I'm making, and do you agree or disagree with it?
Right. Well, if I was in that room with you, it would have been me and you on the same side. I mean, I can say that. I think you nailed it head on. I don't believe that structural racism is the biggest plight for anyone in this country. And I think that argument is used to further divide us. That's a political tool mainly used to divide people in this country. It sort of has its roots in Marxism and what we're calling critical race theory today. But critical race theory is just Marxism rebranded for today. I don't think anyone who's paying attention cannot look at what is going on in the family unit among, you know, specific minorities in this country and not be absolutely devastated and see that as the biggest problem. When you don't, I mean, I have a 5-year-old right now, and I can tell you, if I wasn't in this house, you know, he's on the verge of controlling things in this house. Now, when he becomes 15, he'll be the king of this house if I wasn't here. And that's a biological, sociological, and spiritual truth that we just have to come to terms with. And men don't gloat this over. You know, we need to be sacrificial in our sort of understanding of this. But we have a power that women do not have. And when you remove that power, that natural and supernatural power, out of that household, that family is broken. And things that are broken don't grow up correctly. They grow up broken, usually. And the numbers are just sad. And we really need to get a hold of this. And the government, I think we have a lot of people in political structures in this country that don't want to make it better, because it's beneficial to keep people at odds with each other. And that keeps them in power. So I'm 100% behind your argument on that. So good job.
Yeah, Paul, thank you for calling. Thanks for your patience. I'm going to move along. We'll go to Jesse in Austin, Texas next. Jesse, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. I appreciate so much being able to be on the radio.
Thanks.
Drew, thank you very much. And I'm not discrediting the author at all. I'm 100% behind you. The traditional family unit with the parent, or both parents rather, engaged in the faith, is the best picture you could portray. My favorite saint, our church father, Augustine, was raised by Saint Monica. The prayers of Saint Monica can do so much. So, I mean, like, on Father's Day, I totally agree with you, but I just really want to be adamant that given the position that we are in and the world today, especially our country, we cannot turn away from those single parents, those single mothers, because their works can still perform miracles.
Amen.
In the family. But I do agree with you 100%. But I mean, St. Augustine is an incredible example of, like, an incredible and brilliant theologian and bishop of our church father that was, you know, saved by St. Ambrose was involved for sure. But I mean, that's basically what I wanted to finish on.
Amen to that.
My call.
And I would just, thanks, Jesse. I would just say, that's true, and we need more Saint Monicas, you know, indenting the stones because they're praying with their knees that they're praying so much for their children. I will point to the fact that Saint Augustine went pretty wayward for a while, you know, and you'll actually see that with a lot of these stories when the father sort of isn't around. More modern day examples where the children will come back to the faith. Sometimes it takes a long time, a long journey of hurt and anger and sort of looking for all the, you know, the happiness and all the pleasures of the world. And then it sort of clicks in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s that, you know, there's got to be something more fulfilling out there. And we don't want children to go through decades of sin and anger and hurt. You know, we want the father to be there from the onset and keep them grounded in the faith, give them the foundation that's going to make them secure. I mean, it's a tough world out there. I mean, what foundation are you giving your children? If not Christ, what are you giving them?
Yes, well said. Well, hey, thank you, Tyler, for your time. Thanks for writing the book, too. I know Father Rocky and Patrick Madrid are featured in the book as well. Father's Day is this Sunday. If people would like to get the book, I don't know if they can get it in time, maybe through Amazon they can, but what's the best way to connect? How can they get the book and maybe share the full title of the book as well?
Yeah, if you want to get it for Father's Day, I would go on Amazon right now and order it. You'll probably get it by Sunday. If you want to pay a little bit less and if you want to reach out to me, just go to CatholicFatherBook.com, CatholicFatherBook.com. You can message me. You can buy the book there a little bit cheaper. But Amazon, Ignatius, you'll probably get it. Amazon especially, you'll probably get it by Sunday.
That's great. The book's called Because of Our Fathers, 23 Catholics Tell How Their Fathers Led Them to Christ by Tyler Rowley. Tyler, happy Father's Day to you, okay? Enjoy that five-year-old.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for rolling the radio. God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you. What a great conversation with him. I'm out of time for the day. I wish I had more. Wish I could celebrate Father's Day with you. Unfortunately, I can't, but I'll be back soon after. The book again, Because of Our Fathers, 23 Catholics Tell How Their Fathers Led Them to Christ. Inspiring read. You might want to check it out. I want to wish you, on behalf of all my colleagues here, a very blessed and happy Father's Day. I can't be with you in person, but I will be with you in spirit. And I promise you that. I pray all the time, and I pray for you, and I will be praying for you. Please pray for me and for my family as well. Of course, we could always use it, okay? So into our Paschal cross, remember God loves you. And so do I. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again soon.